upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings, Patrick Wood here for Technocracy News and Trends. Today is July 15, 2019. Well, the war on carbon is in full swing in cities around the world and probably in your city as well, with the rapid introduction and saturation of electric scooters and bicycles. Pedestrians and car owners are equally livid with the mess that it's creating, but that has not been enough to stop the technocratic encroachment of these electric shared vehicles. The first article is titled, Claim, Cars Are Being Displaced by Electric Two-Wheelers, and indeed they are. This story is about Paris, France. It starts out with the wind rushing through their hair. They zip past on bikes, electric scooters, and monowheels, effortlessly passing lines of hot and bothered drivers stuck in the endless Paris traffic. And if you've ever been to Paris, by the way, you know that the traffic is indeed frustrating. In the French capital, the new mobility revolution has caught on fast, with locals and tourists embracing the growing array of app-based ways to get around. And with climate change bringing frequent heat waves and more peak pollution alerts, Paris is beginning to push back against the dominance of the car. Not only is the city upgrading its public transport system, offering of interurban trains, buses, and the metro, it is also enjoying an unparalleled explosion of alternatives. Quote, our cities have been colonized by cars. They get into the smallest gaps. Today, we need to put them back into their proper place, says Christopher Najofsky, the city's deputy mayor who is responsible for transportation. He continues, quote, in Paris, they are only used for 10% of daily trips, but they take up 50% of the public space. But the city has been at the forefront of innovation, setting up pioneering bike-sharing service back in 2007. Known as Vélib, it has since been copied across the globe from London to Chicago. Then came the electric car-sharing scheme, which was followed by a flood of dockless bikes, and then the overnight appearance of e-scooters that exploded onto the streets in the summer of 2018. And that's without mentioning other mobility devices such as two-wheeled hoverboards or electric unicycles. But is there enough space? Not according to the taxi drivers, who are already infuriated with the growing demands on their space and the planned 1,000 kilometers, that is 600 miles, of bike lanes that are due to be completed by 2020. This is in Paris, France. And the estimated 15,000 e-scooters on the streets have also triggered a backlash, with riders initially dumping them randomly on pavements, cluttering the curb, and creating a nuisance for pedestrians. According to one woman in her 40s who walks through the Marais district, she says, quote, I'd like to slap them, close quote. Najofsky continues, Paris is a great playing field, but the space is saturated. They need to bring it back down to two or three operators, like San Francisco, which just has two. At the height, Paris had 13 companies running scooter fleets, but that number dropped to around seven this month after the city brought in a raft of demands for operators. Every day, there are some 41 million trips made in the Paris region, of which 15 million are by car and 10 million by public transport. Today, just over a third, 37%, of Parisian homes have a car, and that drops to one in five in the city center, according to the mayor's office. The priority is to enable city dwellers to get around, says an engineer who specializes in urban mobility. He said, generally speaking, those who are using these new means of transport are people who used to use the metro. So they haven't played a role in easing the traffic. To get away from fuel-powered vehicles, the focus should be on electric bikes, which could potentially help those living in the suburbs, he says. But even there, the infrastructure is lacking. He said, quote, in France, we are two or three times worse off than Germany or the Netherlands in terms of the number of electric bikes. Well, it's interesting to see the genesis of the push for alternative means of transportation. The automobile has definitely been under attack, as we know, for many, many years. And the utopian dreamers, those technocrats, have been bent on implementing electric bicycles, electric scooters, two-wheelers, single-wheelers. And the result has been nothing short of maddening for most cities where this is implemented. This is a technocrat solution to a problem that was laid down many years ago, namely in the Agenda 21 document that was published and created in 1992. On page 60 of the Agenda 21 book, which I have in my hands, it states this, section 7.52, promoting efficient and environmentally sound urban transport systems in all countries should be a comprehensive approach to urban transport planning and management. To this end, all countries should A, integrate land use and transportation planning to encourage development patterns that reduce transport demand, B, adopt urban transport programs favoring high occupancy public transport in countries as appropriate, C, encourage non-motorized modes of transport by providing safe cycleways and footways in urban and suburban centers in countries as appropriate, D, devote particular attention to effective traffic management, efficient operation of public transport, and maintenance of transportation infrastructure. E, promote the exchange of information among countries and representatives of local and metropolitan areas. And F, reevaluate present consumption and production patterns in order to reduce the use of energy and national resources. This is where the push for electric vehicles started. Even though there were no electric vehicles back then, the planners were satisfied just to put bicycles themselves in use and let the people pedal all by themselves or push along on a scooter all by themselves. That actually happened in many countries around the world. In China especially, you can see complete landfills full of bicycles that have been scrapped over a period of time because their program miserably failed. And even today, we see the same thing in many cities around America where e-bike companies have gotten out of business, for instance, and just threw all of their bicycles into a recycling center. This happened in Dallas. In fact, the picture on the story that's posted on Technocracy News today shows that big pile of discarded electric bikes. And not only has it not cut down on congestion within cities, it's increased it. Pedestrians are now more impeded in their walking because of these e-scooters and e-bikes zipping up and down the sidewalks. And in places where bike trails are be putting in, as in France, that takes away from the space that would be used by other types of vehicles that travel the street. And then when you add into the mix all of the additional vehicles that are coming from rideshare and autonomous driving vehicles, you have a big mess. This only points out that technocrats are human just like everybody else. They make mistakes just like everybody else. The dangerous thing about technocrats is they believe that they and they alone have all the knowledge required to run society. Nobody else does, but they do because they have science on their side. And they're so scientific and so logical, you know, that's what they say, that they and they alone are able to solve these types of problems. Well, every time you look at situations like in Paris, France right now, they haven't fixed the problem. They've made the problem measurably worse. They've wasted inordinate amounts of capital in the process, and people are no happier for sure than they were 50 years ago because of this incursion. Well, this is the problem with utopia. Utopia will never arrive, especially at the hands of technocrats. The second story is just about as disturbing. It doesn't have to do with bicycles. It has to do with your own health care. That is your health system that you're operating in. And in this case, a man by the name of Donald Berwick is the radical technocrat pushing single-payer health care in America to Democrats. He's the go-to guy at this point. Berwick is the radical technocrat that Democrats are turning to for health care makeover. He, quote, believes passionately in a society run by a technocratic elite, close quote, where patients should be managed like a herd of animals. Don't mistakenly assume that the technocrat mind is limited to one political party or another. It isn't. Technocracy cuts through all political parties and plans on the ultimate elimination of them all when it gains total control. Technocrats have never had any use for politicians, starting way back in 1932 when technocracy was first defined as an economic system. And this same thing continues today. The article states Donald Berwick is one of the dangerous men technocrats are using to try to make single-payer health care a reality in the United States. If anyone had doubts about the radical nature of Democrats' health care agenda, they needn't look further than the second name on the two witnesses list for Wednesday's House Ways and Means Committee hearing on single-payer health care, Donald Berwick of the Institute for Health Care Improvement. If that name sounds familiar, it should. In summer 2010, right after Obamacare's passage, President Obama gave Berwick a controversial recess appointment to head the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Democrats refused to consider Berwick's nomination in spite of controlling 59 votes in the Senate at the time, and he had to resign as CMS administrator at the end of his recess appointment, late 2011. Even a cursory review of Berwick's writings explains why Obama's only option was to push him through with a recess appointment, and why Democrats refused to give Berwick so much as a nomination hearing. As someone who read just about everything he wrote until his nomination, thousands of pages of article journals, books, and speeches, I know that's the writer of this story. I know the radical nature of Berwick's thinking all too well. He believes passionately in a society ruled by a technocrat elite, thinking that a core group of government planners can run the country's healthcare system better than individual doctors and patients. Here's what this doctor believes in his own words. Here's a number of bullet points. I'll pull out a couple for you. Socialized medicine, for instance. Quote, he says, "Cynics beware. I am a romantic about the National Health Service. I love it. All I need to do to rediscover the romance is to look at health care in my own country, controlled by elites." Quote, "I cannot believe that the individual health care consumer can enforce through choice the proper configurations of a system as massive and complex as health care. That is for leaders to do." Wealth distribution, quote, "Any healthcare funding plan that is just, equitable, civilized, and humane must, he says, distribute wealth from the richer among us to the poorer and less fortunate. Shutting medical facilities, quote, "Reduce the total supply of high technology medical and surgical care and consolidate high technology services into regional and community-wide centers. Most metropolitan areas in the United States should reduce the number of centers engaging in cardiac surgery, high-risk obstetrics, neonatal intensive care, organ transplantation, tertiary cancer care, high-level trauma care, and high-technology imaging. End-of-life care, quote, "Most people who have serious pain do not need advanced methods. They just need the morphine and counseling that have been available for centuries." Cost-effectiveness rationing of care, quote, "The decision is not whether or not we will ration care. The decision is whether we will ration it with our eyes open. Doctors putting the system over their patients." Quote, "Doctors and other clinicians should be advocates for patients or the populations they serve, but should refrain from manipulating the system to obtain benefits for them to the substantial disadvantage of others." Standardized cookbook medicine. Quote, "I would place a commitment to excellence, standardization, to the best known method above clinician autonomy as a rule for care." So indeed, Donald Berwick is a consummate technocrat, and he is the guy that the newly radicalized Democrats are turning to for guidance on health care. This man is a loose cannon as far as technocracy is concerned, and keep your eye on him. If he ever gets his way with our health care system, it will take a radical turn for the worse, and so will our health. Lastly, a new article by Charles Hugh Smith, which I have headlined as 5G and Internet of Things to create unprecedented surveillance. We already know this is true. I ask the question, are citizens required to passively sit by while the manacles of scientific dictatorship are clamped around their necks? More people are recognizing the encroachment, but not enough to slow it or stop it. Smith writes, Convenience is a sales pitch, but the real goal is control and service and maximizing profits and extending state power. When every device in your life is connected to the internet, that is the Internet of Things, your refrigerator will schedule an oil change for your car or something like that, and it will be amazingly wonderful. You'll be able to lower the temperature of your home office while you're stuck in a traffic jam, while your fridge orders another jar of pickles delivered to your door. It's all in service of convenience, the God all Americans are brainwashed to worship. Imagine the convenience of turning on the light while seated on your sofa, mind-boggling convenience at your fingertips. And since you're already clutching your smartphone 24/7, convenience is indeed at your fingertips. It's also about control. And as we lose control of everything that's actually important in our lives, the illusion of agency slash control is a compelling pitch. Imagine being able to program your fridge to order a quart of milk delivered when it gets low, but not order another jar of pickles when that gets low. Wow, that's control. Yowza. The Internet of Things is indeed about control, not your control, but control over you, control of what's marketed to you, and control of your behaviors via control of the incentives, distractions, and micro-decisions that shape behavior. The control enabled by the Internet of Things starts with persuasion and quickly slides into coercion. Since corporations and government agencies will have a complete map of your movements, purchases, consumptions, communications, etc., then behavior flagged as non-beneficial will be flagged for nudging nags, while unsanctioned behavior will be directed to the proper authorities. Say you're visiting a fast food outlet for the fourth time in a week. Your health insurance corporation has set 3 visits a week as a maximum, lest your poor lifestyle choices start costing them more money for treatments. So you get a friendly reminder to lay off the fast food or make healthier choices off the fast food menu. Failure to heed the nudges will result in higher premiums or cancel coverage. Sorry, pal. It's just business. Your freedom doesn't extend to costing us money. Domestic corporate versions of China's social credit score will proliferate. Here's evidence that it already exists, leading to a story, everyone's got a surveillance score and how it can cost you big money. Then there is the surveillance. The Internet of Things just isn't monitoring energy use and the quantity of milk in the fridge. It's monitoring you. Not just in your house, car, and wherever you take your personal surveillance device, i.e. your smartphone, but everywhere you go. If you are a looky-loo shopper, you browse the inventory, but rarely buy anything. Expect to be put in Category 3.0 customer service and heightened surveillance in case your intent is to boost some goodies, i.e. shoplift. Heaven help you if you start spending time reading shadow banned websites like Of Two Minds. That's his website, by the way. Your social credit standing moves into the red zone, and your biometric scans at airports, concerts, retail centers will attract higher scrutiny. You just can't be too sure about people who stray off the reservation of approved corporate media. Your impulses are easy to exploit. Since every purchase is tracked, your vulnerabilities to impulse buys will be visible with a bit of routine big data analysis. And so the price of the treats you succumb to will go up compared to the indifferent consumer next to you. Sorry, pal, it's just business. Your vulnerabilities, insecurities, and weaknesses are profit centers. We'd be foolish not to exploit them to maximize profits because that is the sole mission of global corporations. Yes, there's more to this story too you should read. Technocracy is indeed moving closer every day, and we should not ever make the mistake that it is a Republican or a Democrat issue. Technocrats exist in both parties. They really don't care about the nature of the party. They simply intend to advance their agenda. And when their agenda is complete, the poor politicians on both sides of the aisle are going to be summarily dismissed. This was called for, by the way, back in 1932 and 33 in a published book that requested that Franklin D. Roosevelt install himself as dictator in order to implement technocracy. They said bluntly that as soon as he did so, he should dismiss Congress and dismiss most courts in America, and that he should appoint scientists and engineers to run everything, summarily, without any accountability and without any transparency. Why? Because those technocrats believed that they had science on their side, and science was always right if executed properly. Of course, the problem is they don't execute science properly anyway. That's another story. But anyone who comes to the conclusion that they and they alone have the truth for humanity and for the running of society, reach for your wallet, make sure it's still there. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.